This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, what do you call it, Kramer?
The billiard room.
No.
The name.
The billiard. Not billiard. What? Not the billiards. It was... Come on, everybody. What? Come on. We call it the
place to
be. The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
This is the place to be here tonight.
Time to play the game.
Party people in the place to be. Uh-huh. It's about that time.
Place to be nations. Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Actually, it's being John Akiyama is a better version of it.
What do you think, Woodley? You can finally tell Grant Owens you found new music.
I'll tell you what, I am impressed.
Channel Wilson Brand? Let's get him a rinky dinky dink.
Yeah.
Hey, Nate, man, this is pretty much a highlight of my life right now. I had no idea you were going to be here. I wanted to drive that freaking whole train of my whole youth. You're the man.
And I thought he meant Nate Milton, the Godfather from Kings of Sport. Do you really think that's the Godfather?
Yeah, I did.
All you have to do is break out that fuck money.
I ate the pot. Your mouth is right as
you. That's a bit much. You who murdered the dog with the sword, and I'm being a little too much.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious.
5 years! 5 years! We've been doing podcasts, and we have this. This is trash.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, as usual. Joining me, as always, the man who was getting jiggy with it this past weekend at the Big McGinn wedding, and that is Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
Oh, God. There's plenty more jiggling going on. It was the guy in the pimp suit. Certainly was not me. Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 455 of the Gold Standard. Yeah, that was an interesting social experiment, shall we say.
Yeah, good time.
Yeah, but it was a lot of fun, and we wish the McGinns well. And yeah, it was a good time. Mm-hmm. And then we hung out with Senior on Sunday, yesterday. It was a good time. And here we are. Here
watched
we are.
Great Balls of Fire. And then we had Great Balls of Fire with D'Amato here after the...
Yes.
Bullheads.
Yes. Yes, we did. Switch things up, though, because we knew we would be having our usual wing potpourri in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we decided to switch things up, have some actual meals. I had the July burger of the month, the Living on a Prayer, which was pretty good. I thought it was pretty good. You had my favorite burger, the Landslide. I like mm-hmm. that one a lot.
Good as always.
And
Good as always, we do have our third man in the booth here tonight. He is the... Jimmy Jam to the rest of the free bird. No, we decided you were not Jimmy Jam. But anyway, that is, of course, one of the Titans of wrestling. You hear him on pod blasts and podcasts here at PlaceToBeNation.com. That is the one and only Kelly Nelson. Kelly, how are you?
I'm doing great as always, guys.
Awesome. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Yeah. I don't remember any of it.
Are you doing married stuff now? Home Depot and shit like that?
No. Okay. I mean... We're often, you know, we hardly even see each other sometimes because we have different work schedules. But no, I watched the pay-per-view yesterday, watched Omega versus Ishii from the New Japan show in Long Beach. So, yeah, I had a good wrestling day. Yeah, and I enjoyed the show. The pay-per-view is pretty good.
All right, very, very good. And, of course, we had a lively group going on in our PlaceToBeNation.com comments, which is first time we're talking about it here, Scott, on the show. It is, mm-hmm. of course, we added the comment section over to PlaceToBeNation.com. But the real focus is our daily and evening and special live watch threads, whether it's a pay-per-view, Raw, or even every Friday night, we're going to be doing a live watch of an old show. A lot of fun. There's been a lot of good engagement in there. If you haven't been made aware of it yet, you just go to PlaceToBeNation.com. go to the comments section, or just click on the piece and go into the comments and join us for conversation. That's where all of our conversations will be going forward. So be sure to join us there. We'd love to have you, whether it's on those nights or just any day or night. If you want to come in and share your thoughts,
absolutely.
Feel free. It's a good time had by all. Have you guys been enjoying the experiment?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have quite a bit. We had a lot of comments last night during the pay-per-view. It was a lot of fun. We've had some interesting discussions going on right now because, as we speak, of course, is Monday Night Raw and the Home Run Derby. Your boys, JR, slugging away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Logan Morrison, by the way, he can go fuck himself. Crying and whining about Gary Sanchez getting in, and he just took down Stanton in the first round. So,
How about Morrison. That? Upset of the century, huh?
Yeah, he sucks, Logan Morrison. No one cares about him. Maybe they should test him since he's done shit his whole career until this year. But anyway, maybe he'll be on the Blue Jays next year. So, yes, of course, yeah, a lot going on tonight, including the show we're going to talk about. But be sure to join us in the comments. And we have another addition to the show yet again that we'll talk about later. So stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. But lots going on at PlayStation.com, as always. So, Scott, why don't we jump into tonight's festivities?
We shall. For this evening, we are going back. We're in our home office, JR. We've been in our home offices on 33rd Street for the last couple of months, and we'll be there for a majority of the next few months. Mm-hmm. So let's dive in. For the date is June 14th, 1986, from Madison Square Garden in New York City. Three shows going on today. This is a Saturday, by the way,
yes,
which kind of fits in line. Yep, which kind of fits in line with our pop culture report later.
I like the Saturday shows. I feel like there's a little more excitement in the air versus like a Tuesday or a Monday or something. It's, you know, big night out of the Garden on the weekend.
Absolutely it is. Yep, absolutely. 13,000, so obviously not a huge crowd. Obviously the Fell Forum not open, so not a big crowd on this Saturday. But when you look at the card, it's no surprise why. But two other shows going on this evening. There is one right in Kelly Nelson's basement, otherwise known as the Community Center in Bradford, Ontario.
There you go.
My basement. Oh, yeah. Really close.
So, yeah. No card there. Graham just put the date in the place. But guess where they are, though? They are in at the Ohio Center in Columbus, Ohio. So there is a card there as well. Here's the matches. David Sammartino, who I didn't realize was still with the company, defeated Les Thornton.
Really?
Brickhouse.
Still around?
Yeah.
Brickhouse Brown. Did he left and come back or something? Do you know Kelly? I feel like he just hasn't worked MSG, but I feel like it's been nothing for him since, like, Mania.
Yeah, I think he left and came back multiple times, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, that makes
actually,
more sense.
Actually, before I continue with Ohio, there was actually a doubleheader in Ontario, because during the day, Mr. Nelson, at the Central Exhibition Grounds in Lindsay, Ontario.
Lindsay, I was Jerry.
Yeah, which was the day show, and then at night they were in Bradford at the community center. The Columbus card: David Sammartino defeated Les Thornton. Brickhouse Brown defeated Jerry Valiant. Jesus, he was still at the company too. Corporal Kirshner defeated Paul Christie, which is how low he sunk. Ricky Sneebo fought Jake Roberts to a double DQ. Paul Orndorff defeated Don Morocco via countout, and in the main event, the British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith, and the Dynamite Kid successfully defended their tag team titles against the fading Dream Team.
Well, the Luminaries out in Bradford that evening.
Exactly. What is the rest of our report, JR?
Yeah, Mr. Jarvis checks in. We got a hearty one tonight. Since our last visit to MSG in May, we've had some shit go down. On the May 24th episode of Championship Wrestling, we had a big debut that we will cover more detail later, but the 7-time former NWA World Heavyweight Champion Harley Race made his WWF debut, coming in as Handsome Harley Race, a name he had used in the AWA way back in the day. We'll talk more about him momentarily. Bobby Heenan comes out during a match to announce that Andre the Giant has been suspended. Vince and Bruno indicate an unconfirmed report. The suspension is a result of a campaign that Heenan launched due to Andre missing and no showing a match with Bundy and Stott on April 26th. Of course, the real reason for the suspension was so Andre could take time off to film The Princess Bride. Much more on that to come. On May 24th at the Boston Garden, David Sammartino did return to take on Tiger Chung Lee. He had walked out at the Philly Spectrum 6 months earlier, so there you go. Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage battled for the WWF Championship. Savage won via countout after hitting Hogan with the belt and bloodying him on the floor. And on May 31st, episode of Championship Wrestling, Captain Lou Albano was on commentary during one of the matches, and he confirmed that Andre had been suspended. Albano indicates that he'll be appealing the ruling on behalf of Andre, saying that Andre had been notified the April 26th match had been canceled and wasn't booked that night. So, a lot going on there. We'll talk about as we move along. That's not.
Okay. There you go. All right. Let's get into the building for our first match, which we have El Gorilla and Alfred at the booth. And there was a tag match slated for this card, but it was split in half with one of the guys being replaced. I know that's a lot to talk about, but it does kind of lead into why the show goes the way it does.
Okay.
Get us into our opener, JR.
Our opener is Tony Garea battling Jimmy Jack Funk. Of course, we talked about Jimmy Jack, I believe, last month, right? Was he on? It's not his debut, right?
He was on Saturday Night's main event.
That's where he was. Okay. Then we talked about him. Jimmy Jack has settled right into the lower mid card, but still has Jimmy Hart, so positioned above a jobber to the stars, but a man without a direction. Gorilla and Al have the call, and the crowd heats pretty solid for Jimmy Jack. Gorilla talks about how crazy Jimmy is and wonders why he wears a mask. Gorilla starts hot, tossing Jimmy Jack all over the ring and then grabbing hold of the arm. Jimmy Jack slams Gorilla. Tony keeps holding the arm and rolls through into an arm bar. Gorilla puts Funk down with a shoulder block and gets a cross body block for one before going right back to the arm. Funk comes back and hits a clothesline and goes to work with punches to the head and then continues to use some basic strikes before going to a chin lock. But Gorilla works free and gets a sunset flip for two. Funk maintains control, goes back to the chin lock. Tony gets free for a quick flurry, but Funk takes right back over into a chin lock again. Alfred says he keeps going to that hold, but he has no answer for Gorilla right now. Gorilla breaks the hold with a nice suplex and works over Funk, who keeps trying to beg off. Gorilla really plays to the crowd here and gets chastised by Gorilla and Al for wasting time when he should know better. Gorilla tries a high cross body, but Funk catches him in an awkward spot. Funk powers Gorilla up higher and then drops him with a power slam for the win. Just nothing doing here. Fine in spots, but overall pretty bland, thanks to all the chin locks. Funk shows flashes, but doesn't have enough to advance any further. It's pretty clear at this point. Gorilla was Gorilla as always, so that means a half a star. the Gorilla scale. what'd you think, Scott?
Yeah, I gave this a half star, too. Obviously, Terry is officially gone, and Jimmy Jack is in a spot, and he's not good. He's actually fairly terrible. I mean, this match is drudgery. I mean, there's all these grinding moves and it just didn't flow. It didn't flow. And that seems to be the case with almost every match tonight. Stuff just didn't have a flow to it. A lot of grinded moves that just take up so much time. And I feel like Alfred and Gorilla are spending a lot of these matches tonight, like spinning their wheels, talking about other things. And that's really not what they should be doing. I know that we're kind of in a dead spot in the year, but they really should be more informative and get into more stuff. And instead, they're just kind of, you know, being very flippant about things. Your official time is 10:09, which is probably 8 minutes too long. it just wasn't good. I also gave it a half star as well. Kelly?
Yeah, well, that'll make three of us. So I gave it a half star. Also, probably just for Tony Garea and his fabulous, ever fabulous hair. I don't know. Yeah, well, now the stable is complete with Jimmy Jack Funk here of the fifth-rate clones, because we have C.V. Offey, Danny Spivey, Corporal Kirshner, and now Jimmy Jack Funk, all these phonies that really aren't very good in the ring. I've named them the four boarsmen. I don't know. Maybe I could have done better.
I'll take it.
That's yeah. Yeah, it's just Jimmy Jack Funk. When I first got into wrestling, yeah, he was all over TV, pretty much almost relegated to jobber duty by that time. So his time as a push guy doesn't last very long. Yeah, Gorilla mentioned Tony's hunting for a new tag team partner so he can get his sixth tag team title reign. And yeah, the hunt's been going on for about 5 years at this
point. Good luck to that, Tony. Good luck.
he almost had one a couple of years earlier with B. Brian Blair, actually. They formed a team for a good 3 or 4 months that was somewhat pushed. But, yeah, that was as close as Tony got to number six. Yeah, this was a boring match. 10 minutes, very long. Gurria didn't have much to give at this point. We've seen him in quite a few boring matches in the last couple of years.
And I feel like Jimmy Jack maybe would have been fine is like in the tag team with Dory, where Dory can do majority of the work and Jimmy Jack just kind of comes in spots. But him as a solo guy is just you can tell he's just so limited that he doesn't have enough to make it click for longer matches on his own.
Yeah. So true. Totally pointless having him do singles matches. I did like his power slam at the end where he basically deadlifted Gurria. I don't know if Gurria like sandbagged.
It took him a little while though. I thought he was going to drop him actually.
Yeah.
It took him a little bit to get set up for it, but he did hit it pretty good once he did.
Well, I think I wonder if he was he supposed to do it out of the cross body, because he kind of catches him and it's awkward and he like puts him back down and then hoists him up and power slams him. So I'm wondering if he's supposed to catch him on the cross body and just go right into it, and instead he had to just deadlift him back up.
I think so. Yeah, it was basically a botch that actually turned out looking good in the end.
Yeah.
Yeah, JJ Funk, as the graphic says, probably one of his few singles wins of any note that we'll see. Yeah, not much of a match.
All right. So moving on, we stay in the ring as we head to, we'll see, Pedro Morales battling the Iron Sheik. And I don't know, maybe on paper, if you catch these guys in the right month, like, is it like Pedro seems to maybe alternate every every one good match, he has like two bad ones, so who knows. And Sheik, we've seen some good stuff from him before, but is he motivated? Pedro continues his random mid-card tour. Sheik is without Blassie or Nikolai tonight. We'll go it alone. Gorilla and Al joke about oil prices as we get some stalling to start off. Sheik keeps bailing and dodging Pedro, who just stands around and rallies the crowd. Some guy in the crowd is waving a full-size flag, which is distracting Sheik. Sheik puts Pedro down with a shoulder block. Pedro comes right back with a hard right hand to the gut. This sends Sheik to the floor again. Pedro drills Sheik as he comes back in and tries for a Boston Crab, but Sheik gets to the ropes. We get more stalling and jawing at the crowd until Sheik grabs control and kicks and chokes away. Sheik loads the boot, kicks Pedro's head before going to an abdominal stretch. Pedro hip tosses free, but Sheik shoots him to the corner and chucks him over the top rope. Sheik hammers at Pedro and climbs back and knocks him back outside. Pedro rolls in and Sheik kicks at him and then grabs the camel clutch. The crowd is rallying Pedro here as he reaches the ropes to force the break. Pedro goes to the eyes, but Sheik maintains control and slugs away. Pedro fends him off and comes out of the corner with a flurry, eventually knocking Sheik to the apron. Sheik ties up Pedro's foot in the ropes and shoves him back in the chokes and kicks away before shoving the ref for a disqualification. Morales slugs Sheik with the microphone after the bell to chase him off. What a complete fucking garbage ending this was. The match was really bad. And just when it was maybe starting to get a little decent toward the end, we get that trash bag finish that made it all just a waste of time. There's a couple of glimmers in there, but really it's just aimless and boring. You could tell neither guy had any interest in having that match. Morales going absolutely nowhere fast, and Sheik seems to be joining him there. So I went with a big old dud for this shitbag match. What'd you think, Kelly?
Wow, a dud for two former WWF champions, too. At this time, that was an impressive accomplishment. I think there was only 9 in total in 1986. Yeah, no, there wasn't much to this. Like, the Sheik spent most of his time jawing at the fans in the front row. There was this one particularly big dude with a wife beater on screaming at the Sheik that looked like he might hop the guardrail at any moment. Sheik seems to elicit that kind of response from fans more than most wrestlers for, I guess, the Foreign Menace heat. Yeah, dull. I thought, you know, Pedro's comeback was hot, and that's his specialty. But yeah, disqualification, finish. You're not going to have either guy job in this match.
Why not?
well, Pedro, I mean, Pedro's still protected in that sense. If he's going to job, he's going to job to, like, Randy Savage.
Yeah, I know.
You know, someone high up. Sheik, Sheik didn't do too many jobs ever, really, when you look at it.
Why have them fight then? Who cares? Like, oh God, what was Volkov doing? I mean, I guess he was just off this night, but him, I mean, at least him and Sheik together, you get a little spice. But if Sheik is unmotivated, he's terrible. But I mean, when he's into it, he's good. But God, this was a fucking slog.
Yeah, I went 1 star, but the way you talked about it, I know. JR, you made it sound way worse than what I thought it was after watching it. I mean, I thought it was better than Jimmy Jack Funk and Tony Gurria.
Oh, God.
So I guess,
Kelly.
I guess that was my reasoning that I couldn't, because I thought that match was worse. But, you know, it's a 1986 meaningless MSG match.
Dud,
half star, 1 star. It's all the same, really.
Snowflake intervention for you.
Okay.
All right, Scott, how many stars do you give this? 4.5?
That was the most incredible example of charity I've ever seen in my entire life. I don't know what you're smoking. Maybe there was something going on in that Brantford, Ontario house show that night. I don't know what you guys were doing in the basement, but this match is a dud, and it's disappointing, and it is sad because, like you said, Kelly, you know, this is two former world champions, but obviously WWF didn't think like that back then. This match is a mess, and you mentioned Nikolai, JR, but he's on later in the show.
That's right.
So yeah. he is floating around. But I don't think they're being treated like a tag team anymore. That's probably why. But your time of this match, you know, Kel, you owe me 11 minutes and 16 seconds, okay?
Kelly wants a compilation DVD of just this match.
from different camera angles and different languages. And it was just the drizzler. And what's sad is, like, Sheik spent more work rate jawing at that big fat guy in the behind the guardrail than to actually wrestle this match. It was a lot of stomping, and it just wasn't good. And Pedro just needs to. We had this conversation once before, guys, about, you know, why Pedro was, you know, pretty much, this guy is a former world champion, and he's being treated like just some dude. And, you know, if Gorilla didn't mention that he was a former world champion, I don't think anybody would even know it. And that's sad.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he was, you would mention JR, maybe he just loved wrestling, but I think he was just ridiculously broke. Or I don't know what the deal was, but he's just embarrassing himself because these matches are terrible.
Like I said, for every couple bad ones, he'll squeeze out one good one. This was not it, Kelly, no matter how much you want to stump for it as match
well,
of the year.
One star.
There may as well be five for this fucking match. One star is high on an MSG house show.
It's true. I gave a half star for the fans. You know, the wife beat the fan and the wife beater was worth half a star.
Well, then this should have been a dud still.
Oh my god! And Gorilla and Alfred like completely trashed that poor guy. He's like, oh, that guy's a walking example of cardiac arrest. Alfred's like, the next match he should have would be with a snack bar or something. I don't know. He said something stupid. But yeah. That was pretty much the highlight of this. This is just utter trash. And it is really disappointing that, you know, that Pedro is just so bad now. Sheik, you know, Sheik was having his own probably medicinal issues at that time. So God only knows what condition he was coming out anyway. But Pedro should be better than this. I know you guys loved Pedro to death back in the Titans days, Cal, but and this is just humiliating for him just to have one stinker after another on the stage that he helped build in the early mid 70s. And and now he's just an embarrassment onto himself. So, there's nothing more to say. This is a dud. I don't know where you got that star from. I'm sure you're going to knock it off something.
I feel like I was like nice after hearing Scott tear into this. I mean, he's putting poor Pedro in the fucking shine box.
Wow. All
right.
Pedro should get his fucking shine box. All right. So 11 minutes and 16 seconds that Kelly owes us. let's move on to a match even longer.
With Parv.
Uh-huh.
Let's move on to the next match, which is equally as long and equally as bad.
Kelly, what was that?
Bad JR.
Oh, I said Scott could do an I Hate Pedro Morales podcast with Parv.
This will not be on Pedro's case list for the Greatest Dirty Wrestler Ever project, for sure. This will not be spotlight.
If people love Pedro, don't listen to this. This is the way you find.
Well, I think if you love Pedro, it's not because of this run, but okay. We have the Moondogs back in action in a tag setting, a rare tag setting, it seems like, here at MSG. Lined up as good veterans for this tag bout against Dan Spivey and Mike Rotundo. Rotundo's still hanging around, now teaming with Spivey. I mean, basically just aping the U.S. Express. They're even fucking using Born in the USA here. They're wearing matching gear. They're toting out the American flag. Spivey basically is cosplaying as Wyndham. I mean, it's like openly obvious that they're trying to trick people here to think it is Barry Wyndham if you're not paying attention. And I'm not saying it's a bad idea to put Spivey with Rotundo, but they could have at least maybe mixed up the gimmick a little bit. Like, even using Born in the USA, this is over the top. Rotundo and Spot open up as we get some serious talk about Rotundo's credentials. Rotundo and Spivey tag in and out while working over Spot and Rex, where they start working the arm. Al says Spivey's an exciting young wrestler, and Gorilla talks about his furry boots from his early days before switching over. Spot tags in Spivey, but Spivey makes quick work of him, leading to Rex tagging back into action. He gets knocked to the floor. Rotundo comes in. Rex escapes and tags out, but it doesn't matter. Rotundo catches Spot in a side headlock and takes him down. Rex catches a blind tag and seeks into clobber Rotundo to swing momentum. Rex punches away and then shoots Rotundo into the ropes, where Spot botches pulling the top rope down, so Rex just comes over and kicks him to the floor. Rotundo climbs back in, but Spot grabs a front face lock and tags in Rex, who hammers away, hoists Rotundo up and drops him across the top rope for two. Gorilla notes that the Moondogs have showed better teamwork than Rotundo and Spivey. Rotundo gets a couple of flash pin covers but can't convert. Rex tags in and kicks him back down. Rotundo finally escapes and makes a tag, but Spivey comes in and cleans house. Spot gets knocked to the floor. Spivey drops an elbow on Rex and gets a small package for a near fall. Spivey follows with an awkward reverse neckbreaker and tags in Rotundo, who gets the win with an airplane spin. Al said that this keeps him in line for a title shot, and says this was fine but kind of, boring, as the heat segment is plotting and the hot tag at the end petered out quickly. Rotundo looked good as always, but that was about the only highlight here. I went a star and a half. Scott, yourself?
I gave this a star. It was okay. But it's amazing how, I don't know if it was just the company or the announcers, pretty much never gave any props to Dan Spivey. Even Alfred at the beginning of the show said, or beginning of this match, goes, when Dan Spivey came here, we didn't really think much of him. It's pretty much saying, this guy came in and he was a piece of trash.
So, well, I wonder how much they were, like, disappointed that he couldn't step in for Wyndham. Like, do you think the expectation was they thought this guy could be good enough to slip in for Wyndham and maybe still be pretty good, and just openly disappointed in him? I don't know. I mean, on the flip side, it feels like they're actually re-pushing him here a bit after we didn't see much of him for a little bit. Now they're putting him back with Rotundo returning. It seems like, you know, they're trying again. So I don't know. Maybe they hadn't run out. It just, you're right. It just seems weird that they're kind of re-pushing him, but they're also kind of dumping on him.
But do they, but it, was it already acknowledged though that that Mike was leaving? Like, did it even matter in that aspect?
Well, no, I think he had left and came back, from what I recall.
Yes, right. That's right. He, I think it just returned right around this time.
So the contract was up, he went to Crockett and then came back?
No. He left with Wyndham, and then he just, I think he just does, like, I don't know. I, he doesn't go to Crockett.
As far as I knew, the whole story was that they both got Crockett deals at the same time, but Mike played out his, you know, worked his dates and left amicably, whereas Barry decided to take the low road and just leave, which is why he ended up getting, you know, the gimmicks he got, and why Rotundo ended up getting the ones he got down the line. And I thought that just they were filling out these dates by using Spivey to just do the new US Express, just to have another tag team. Now, I'm guessing that this was maybe some sort of stepping stone for Spivey to do something after Rotundo leaves, kind of help boost him to a future singles push. That was my assumption.
The new US Express, yeah, the new US Express lasts for pretty much all of 1986. I think Rotundo left
in early the year.
Yeah, he stayed for a couple more months after Wyndham left, then left on his own, and I'm not sure where he went, maybe to Florida again.
You know what? I'll have to ask Dr. G, because he was living down there and was watching Florida. So maybe I'll have to ask him if Rotundo went to Florida.
Well, he does. He does eventually before Crockett, because he doesn't go to Crockett for a while, because he comes back. Yeah. He comes back to WWF here to team with Spivey for a while. And then he actually it was actually AWA. He went to AWA with Wyndham in 86. The U.S. Express reunited in the AWA to wrestle Rock 86. On April 20th, 1986, the Fabulous Ones.
I watched that. We watched that for the adventure.
I think that was the only U.S. Express match in the AWA, though.
Well, this says the team did not stay long, as Wyndham left shortly after debuting, and Rotundo stayed for a few more months with no success. Then he comes back to WWF, leaves in early 87, goes to Florida, and then to Crockett.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, well, that makes sense then. The shade that the announcers are throwing Spivey's way is just crazy. And I mean, this match is just, it's not as bad as the first two, but it's still not good. I mean, the Moondogs are just, they're just not good. As much as what I love, we love Spotty as kind of a singles guy. He's a good workable guy in these matches. Rex is a mess. And it was just, it was slow and plotting. It was not good. And I don't think it was a good indication of Spivey or or Rotundo. And it's unfortunate because I kind of dug them. You know, they came out to Born in the USA. They were trying. Kind of sucked. I was kind of hoping they'd be better, but they weren't. And I wish I could give this match higher. I wish I could, but a star is about all I could go. What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, that's as high as I went as well, one star. In many ways, this was kind of like CVAffi's debut, right? Where, remember in 1985, the U.S. Express, when they came out to Born in the USA, the crowd was nuclear hot. You know, they were one of the most over acts on the roster. And then now, a year later, this U.S. Express comes out to Born in the USA, and it's just crickets.
Nothing.
There's no response. Yeah, just totally dead. It's really striking how much of a difference it is.
And do you think it's
year.
Wyndham versus Spivey, or just the fact how it went is what really killed it?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the fans, and in this, and, you know, in MSG, they're a bit more savvy, mm-hmm. where they're seeing yet another, you know, phony, you know, rip off of someone that they loved before come out, and it's like, really, you know, the U.S. Express, you expect us to embrace them as much as the original team? You know, it was such an obvious, just desperate attempt here to get something out of Mike Rotundo, basically, and Danny Spivey, I guess, but it had no chance. This match, it was nice to see the Moondogs as a team for, you know, the first time in quite some time. Like, usually they were split up in singles for whatever reason. I don't know why they didn't use them as a team much.
I kind of like them better as singles. I don't know. I feel like they've worked better as singles guys for some reason. I don't know. Just, it seems like it's real, just short, small sample size. But I feel like the matches we've seen, I've enjoyed Spot more as like a heel working on his own than like when these guys are together. But it could just be that we haven't seen much of it.
No,
yeah,
I agree.
That Spot was good as a jobber for the Stars heel. And their best years as a team were well past them now, that's for sure. But yeah, it's still nice to see them reunited because they had a lot of great moments earlier in the 80s as a team. But yeah, no heat. I mean, the crowd did come alive at the end for the House of Fire by Spivey. But yeah, this is not a good omen or a good sign for the second U.S. Express going forward.
Bummer. We like Spivey, but Alfred Kulig did not. So, you know, when we first got this guy first came in, everyone thought he was a loser. That's just what he said. So, all right.
And it continues.
Speaking of, you were talking about Cheeky Baby.
Speaking of losers,
and we go from this might be about as low as this fucking card goes.
I guess lower. All right, so next up we have George Steele taking on Nikolai Volkoff, and like you mentioned, Scott, Nikolai, his teammate, of course, was working earlier in the night, the Sheik. Nikolai's out alone, starts to sing, but Steele charges the ring and sends him to the floor. Do you guys think it's weird that Nikolai and Sheik don't back each other up? Usually they're out there together on all these shows. Were they starting to slowly break them up as a team?
I don't know. I mean, I think it was because Blassie wasn't around. He was the glue to hold them together wasn't there for whatever reason. Yeah.
Usually they're just at least out there with each other. Big rematch, of course, in their dud back in July of 85. We'll see if they can top it. Steele charges the ring, sends Nikolai to the floor. Al calls Steele a hairy beast, his albino mug to the camera. After stalling for a bit, Nikolai comes in and punches away in the corner, whips Steele to the corner, and Steele just stands there and waits until Nikolai comes in, and he hammers some more. Steele gnaws at the turnbuckle as Volkoff weakly, and I say weakly, pounds his back. Very weak. Steele shoves the padding in Nikolai's eyes and kicks at Nikolai. Nikolai makes a comeback, and now he stomps away until Steele pulls an object out of his pants and jabs it in Nikolai's throat. Steele flails away and bites Nikolai, who fends him off and keeps kicking and choking as we just amble through this. Nikolai tries a clothesline, but Steele catches his arm in his mouth and bites down until Nikolai slugs Steele to the floor. Steele grabs a chair, gets on the apron, and decks Nikolai with it for the DQ. Just a fucking train wreck disaster. Meandering, nonsensical strikes, bullshit, with a brutal finish, a complete waste of time and effort. Another fucking DQ out of four matches. We've had two awful matches, both of the DQ. Just waste. Why not just do a goddamn tag match then with Nikolai and Sheik versus Morales and Steele and just get it over with one big DQ? Why are we going to protect all four of these schmucks? Just bad. I think it's probably one of the worst matches we've seen since we're doing these shows. Steele has been consistently one of the worst guys as well, but this was just a fucking train wreck. I had no joy in watching this match at all. How long was this shit fest, Scott? You know?
Well, the Moondog, I failed to mention earlier, the Moondogs Express match was the longest of the night at 11:37. This one was mercifully only 6:21, but probably
26:31.
It was probably 6:10 too long. But yeah, pretty bad. Kel, you first. Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Kelly, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No more trashing to do? Okay. Got it all out. Go ahead, Kel.
Okay. So, JR, you went dud on that one?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big dud. A big steaming fucking pile of dud.
A big milk dud.
2 years in a row, these guys fought in June and had a shit. Or was it July? Did I say the last year? July, yeah. So they had a dud in July and another dud here in June.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you'll be happy to know that I agree with you on this one. And I gave it a dud. It was interesting for me to see the psychology that comes out of this one, because Steele's still wrestling as a heel, basically, right? Biting, using a foreign object, rubbing the foam into the eyes. So Volkov's almost getting sympathy in this match because he's getting beat on the whole time. He doesn't even really get any heat on Steele. It was a total mess. Steele was still super over. That's why I almost considered giving it a half star, because there was Steele had heat. I mean, the fans loved the guy. Like, he was beloved. I mean, it was a long time, you know, character in the territory, so he was kind of like a mascot for fans. He didn't have much left. Volkov definitely didn't have much left either. This is your total, you know, perfect example of a 1986 two guys just really kind of just phoning it in type match. And Albano, yeah, he's getting increasingly annoying with each passing month. I miss heel Albano so much at this point. Yeah, babyface Albano does nothing for me. And yeah, we don't need to talk about, or I don't need to talk about this match anymore, Dud.
I'm worried about you, Kelly, considering half a star for this. Who cares? George Steele sucks. I don't care how over he was. I can already hear Johnny Sauer now. I love George Steele. But, you know, it's maybe an in-the-moment kind of thing. I get it. But
age well at all. I mean, if you're removed from the context, he means nothing and he looks horrible. That's for sure.
I could just hear Johnny now. Dude, he was the greatest character of all time. Nah, love you, Johnny. This match is a disaster. I don't know why George Steele is still getting trucked out there doing anything with anybody. Albano aside, who unfortunately was the only babyface manager, so we were kind of stuck with him. This is just a disaster. Why he is still being trucked out there for any reason is beyond my control. There are so many other solid baby faces that could go out there and put on a better match against a pretty good guy, a pretty decent worker in Nikolai Volkov, if you could work him good enough. This is just a disaster. Yeah, but he was looking pretty good in some of those matches with Kirshner, and that was against a guy who probably, yeah. I mean, equally as untalented as...
well, Kirshner can at least kind of bump and get thrown around. Steele can't even move.
No, I mean, it's a disaster. I don't know why he's still there. He's not even being good as a comedic or as even a cartoon type character. He's just terrible, period. There's just nothing good going on here.
No.
So I don't know why he's still getting trucked out there and being a worker. It makes no sense. Absolutely not. And all it's doing is just making a bad card worse. There's really nothing on the table, nothing brought to the table. With this, and I'd be happy never seeing him again, but sadly we got him for a decent amount.
You still have all those Saturday night's main event matches against, spoiler, I'll stop right there. You got a lot of steel left.
Yes, there is a lot of steel left, unfortunately. Yes, there is. Yeah, but the Saturday's main events I don't mind, because those matches are short, and they kind of hit the whole television thing. But for a house show, we want good matches for house shows. We don't need all this bullshit. I don't mind him.
Well, we're not going to get good matches, but we don't need stuff this bad. I mean, at least on Saturday's main event, you kind of get the polished production. You get Vince yelling, Jesse. Yeah, I mean, you know, right. there's more bells and whistles to it.
Yeah, yeah, it meant something. Right. His feud with Savage, it was meaningful. This, yeah, he's doing nothing here.
Totally. This is just a throwaway garbage nonsense. You know, yeah. Nothing doing.
Yeah. So it's nuts. And I also gave it a dud. Two duds in the first four matches, that is not a good sign. Not a good sign at all.
And it's about to get
this
worse.
This next match is just a dud because they're in it. There's nothing. Go ahead. We all know where this is going.
All right. So next up, we have midget action. This Cowboy Lang battles Lord Littlebrook. Jeff gave us some background, but we've talked about these guys before, right? Cowboy Lang. He's been on this, right? Have we seen him?
They've both been in tags with each other. Yeah. Like Cowboy Lang's been with a baby face, and usually Little Brook's with Little Tokyo.
The less we got to talk about it, the better. We continue to swirl the drain, meaningless midget match. Stuff is fine to break up a hot card, but on a show like this, and then we have to go to the sideshow to waste time. We get the usual hijinks with some actual wrestling mixed in. Gorilla and Al riff on whatever they can to keep themselves occupied. And as usual, I give a standard midget match a standard grade, and that is one star for Cowboy Lang and Lord Littlebrook. And that's it. I have nothing else to say. I refuse to waste any other breath. Scott?
I gave it a half star. I'm not going to be a jerk and just give it a dud on principle. That's not fair. But the lowest I could possibly go and staying diplomatic. Although I did like Littlebrook's little strut in the beginning when he broke out of those moves. He did the little midget strut.
I had some pizzazz. I'll give him that.
That was cute. Otherwise, the thing is trash. Half star. Kelly?
Jeez. Well, this is one of the better matches of the night. Lord Littlebrook.
What are you smoking tonight? What is wrong with you?
He loves the midgets. Well, Kelly loves the midgets.
One star is second best match territory almost. That's here. Yeah. Lord Littlebrook was a legend as a midget wrestler. He was 57 years old in this match, by the way.
It's like
so,
DeMotto
yeah.
working a match.
And he was actually one of the better workers of the night, actually. Very entertaining. You know, he had it all down. Yeah, it was this could be basically, you know, if you wanted to give an example of a midget match from the golden age or the bygone era, this would be the one to show them because it has all the spots. It has the ass biting spot. Yeah, I gave it one star, mostly just for, you know, I was giving paying tribute to Lord Littlebrook and his greatness.
You know what, Kel? Being a legendary midget wrestler is the equivalent of being the best player on a last place team.
Well, that's something.
Nobody cares.
I like my last place teams. My Blue Jays are in last place.
So used
right
to
now.
It, yes.
Well, and as we talk about later, they were pretty close to it in 1986 as well. So.
Really? Wow.
But we'll get there.
Oh, fun my
stuff.
God.
This all right. Brutal. We go backstage. Gorilla Monsoon, that is chatting with Adrian Adonis, Randy Savage, and Jimmy Hart about their big match tonight. They promise victory and shrug off Gorilla's accusations and barbs. So here we go. Finally, something of substance. And this looks like, on paper, to be a blast and a winning match. Adonis and Savage have heel arrogance off the charts. Their entrance is great, full of class. Huge pop for Tito and Bruno as they jog out for this big showdown. Of course, this was set up last month when Bruno was the ref and Adonis broke up the match and cost Tito the Intercontinental title. Everything fires up right away as Bruno and Tito slide in the ring and clean house. Al puts over Tito's fire and Bruno's intensity as things settle down and the heels regroup. Savage chucks a chair in the ring, but Bruno slings him into the buckle when he tries to get back in. Adonis comes in the other way and Tito beats the piss out of him. Savage uses Liz to shield himself from Bruno as Adonis gets dumped outside too. Adonis slams Tito hard on the floor and he's limping as the chaos clears. Bruno's begging someone to get in the ring and get things started as Tito shakes off the pain on the apron. Adonis and Savage both come in, but Bruno mows right through them both, chucking Adonis to the floor and getting a near fall on a knee to the gut of Savage. Bruno keeps Savage in the ring and tags Tito, who pelts both guys with right hands. Tito keeps the heat on Savage, who has no chance to gain his bearings. Bruno comes in and hammers and knees away until Savage falls to the corner and tags Adonis. Adrian preens his way in, but Bruno gets a trio of arm drags, and then he and Tito pinball Adonis with punches. Tito tags in and works the arm, and then gets a wild cross body for two. Tito keeps hammering away before grabbing a side headlock, but Adonis breaks with a back suplex. Both men make tags, and Bruno meets Savage with punches and a hard kick to the gut that sends Macho to the floor to regroup. Savage gets back in, and Bruno's all over him. Tito heads outside and pace Savage with a chair as he's leaning in the ropes, giving Bruno a two count. Both men make tags, and the crowd is all heated up as Adonis preens again and then lays in some punches and heads up top. Adonis comes off with a splash, but Tito gets the knees up at the last minute. Savage sneaks in and clubs Tito from behind to help keep Adonis in control. Adonis misses an elbow drop but tags in Savage, but that's too late as Tito tags in Bruno. Adonis and Tito brawl to the floor as Bruno slugs away at Savage. Savage and Bruno spill outside too, and now Tito gets tangled with Jimmy Hart, and that allows Adonis to hit him from behind. Savage goes to the top rope and pelts Bruno with an axe blow to the floor. Bruno and Tito are writhing in pain on the floor and get counted out, giving Savage and Adonis an unlikely win. And given the way most of this match went, you kind of expected them just to maybe get squashed. Tremendous fun at a breakneck pace, but never slowed down. The crowd ate it all up. Savage and Adonis bumping around at their best. And I wish this went like 20 minutes and just got rid of all the other matches before it. At least another 20, I should say. Great follow-up to last month, but I want to say, I hate to use the word disappointing because I really enjoyed it, but I think when you look at this on paper and with the build and everything it could have been, I think it, you know, probably was a little disappointing. So I went 3 stars, and I don't know. I was expecting a little bit more. I feel like more time, more of a heat segment could have been worked in there. I mean, Tito could have taken a beating longer than he did and let Bruno get the hot tag. And again, in a night filled of shaky finishes, we get a count out here. And I get, again, you want to protect guys, but God, all, you know, we've had, what, 6 matches, and take out the midgets because they're not really, you know, a match. So out of 5 matches, we've had 2 DQs and a count out. So a rough, rough go here on the show so far, Kelly.
Yeah, when you put it that way, yeah, it's a rough go. But, you know, it's all part of a master plan to get to the next show, this match. Basically, it's almost like an angle more than a match, because the whole point of the match was to set up a match that would draw a big house, presumably next month. So we can forgive him for that. It was still a really good match.
Right.
We're getting spoiled with all the Savage, Santana, Bruno stuff, because it's all been really good. And this is, you know, probably the least of all the matches they have in the 5-match run. Well, it definitely is, but it's still pretty good. Crowd was, of course, red hot, all out brawl, chairs, awesome heat, just action from everywhere right at the beginning. Bruno was working really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
And Savage and Adonis were having like a master class in bumping right here. They were just making Bruno look awesome. More chairs, more brawling. It was just, like I said, it was basically like a match that you kind of sacrifice almost to set up something greater. So I'm cool with that. But, you know, it's with these 4 guys, it's super entertaining. But yeah, in the midst of this card we're going through, you're right. It would have been nice to get a true 4-star match tonight, but we're not going to get that, unfortunately. I went 3 stars on this one. Really liked it, but of course it didn't hit that next gear to really warrant anything more than that.
Do you think they should have tried to bring Bruno back for more of an extended run? Like, he has looked really good. He is really over. There's kind of a dearth right now on top, and I know he does have a little bit of a run here. Like, they do more than just a couple matches, but I wonder if they could have gotten him in the mix more. You know, we talked about this back at WrestleMania. Could they have done him and Savage with the IC title? Like, could there have been something more for him on these shows? You got Pedro out there rolling around doing nothing. I mean, could Bruno have had more of a sustained push in 86 when they had a kind of an emptiness at the top with Hogan out, Andre out? Well, I mean, Hogan's not out, but he's not doing much. Andre out. You know, there was kind of a hole there for him.
Well, it's funny because in Philadelphia and Boston, especially Boston, they do use Bruno as almost like a Hulk Hogan draw at the time. In New York, for whatever reason, they used him as the guest ref. They use him in this tag setting. I don't think they use him again, you know, in a meaningful spot, really. And, yeah, I'm not sure why. They definitely could have used him. I think Vince was hesitant to use him on a national level because he never got any of that Bruno wrestling stuff on the Saturday TV show.
Right.
Right? Because he was older, and he definitely looked old at this point. Gray hair, balding. Definitely stood out from the rest of the pack. But as a worker, he was still great and could do a lot. And, yeah, I mean, in a different setting, yeah, he could have definitely done done more, but what they do get out of them at this time was still pretty good, but not so much at Madison Square Garden.
What do you think of the match, Scott? What do you think of? Could they have used Bruno more than they did?
I gave this 3 stars like you did, but I also agree that I do feel like it's just something missing. It didn't get over the hump of it being, I mean, it was match of the night, obviously, because, you know, nothing was coming close. It was as much that you could, the bar was low for match of the night, but something wasn't there. Just fell short, and I'm not sure what it was. First off, the promo, going into this match, their promo beforehand was better than any of the matches before. I liked when Adonis is just so awesome. Savage is his typical awesome Savage, but when Adonis goes, what did he call Tito? Mr. Cucaracha? And then he called Bruno the Potato Head. It was so funny. It was great. Just classic Adonis. And the match was good. Crowd was hot because I'm sure they knew that not much was coming, not much after this was going to be as good. So they definitely invested all of their energy into the match, which made the feel of the match better. But it was just so flat all around it that it kind of elevated it more than it probably was. There was definitely something missing. I'm not sure what – I can't figure out what it was, but something was missing that could have put it even higher. Because at this time, Savage and Adonis, 3 stars is perfect. And Tito's Tito. Now, question two. I kind of mostly agree with Kelly that – I mean, Bruno on the Garden shows and the Boston shows and maybe Toronto and maybe Philly – I think would have been fine. I wouldn't have ventured him out anywhere else. Obviously, he was co-hosting Championship Wrestling with Vince, so he wasn't on. He couldn't have wrestled on that show, and I don't know if he could have done the others. That was the problem. Vince, I think, had already I think Vince had already settled on the fact that Bruno was an announcer, which again goes back to the question of what he thought of Pedro or what Pedro needed.
I don't think he thought as highly as Pedro, so that's why he's running him out there in jobber matches. I mean, Bruno,
exactly.
He's
that's exactly.
More
I agree 100%. I agree with you 100%. So I think on the occasional MSG show, like, you know, he was the special ref for the match and for that last match, and it didn't do as much as it could have. So I'm not sure.
I guess I'm just looking at it as like they seem to have a opening up top, because with Hogan, I don't know if he's taking the summer off or what, and Andre's out doing the film, and Piper's not around as much. It's kind of like who is the big draw right now? The Bulldogs? I mean, the Bulldogs are pretty much, you know, on the majority of these cards in big matches. JYD, I guess. And then Tito. And so, I mean, you're kind of missing that big name draw. So I do wonder if Bruno just could have done more than he was doing to help prop up some of these cards. And I only say it because he looks so fucking good in the ring still. Like, he's still working his ass off out there.
He is.
You know, he doesn't look embarrassing or out of place. He looks like a guy that could still go. So, I mean, that's more my thought, is like they kind of have this guy with name value that could still work. You know, what are you doing? Maybe get more out of him. That's all. But yeah, the match itself, I feel like when you look at this card, the fact that it's only got 9 minutes, I think is kind of a shame, because, I mean, it really could have been so much more if it went 15, 16, and you get more of a heat segment with a hot tag and a comeback. It kind of gets to the heat segment, and then you get the count out. Like, you know, there's not much more to it. They didn't really follow much of a structure. So I think this could have had more to it.
Well, the midget match didn't need to be 10:01. So,
well, you got that. You got the Sheik match as 11. You know, like, I mean, you know, you have all the stuff out there that, you know, even the tag with Rotundo is 11. So, I mean, those could have all been. If you take 2 or 3 minutes off of that, those two matches and the midgets, you know, they're all still get decent time, and then this gets another 6 minutes or so. So, I think they could have done more, for sure, with this, and given them more time to at least put something good on the show.
I agree 100%, and it. 9:40, which is the official time, seems to be criminally short for what was easily the hottest match of the night. Even just looking at it on paper, it was the hottest match. You knew, everyone knew it was going to be. So, all right, well, why don't we take a break? JR, I kind of know how you feel about the show so far.
Oh, God.
I was looking at some of my past grades of our shows so far since we've done the restart, and the lowest grade I've given is so far on a show is 3.5. The show is dangerously becoming close to I shouldn't say surpassing, but going lower than that, depending on how the rest of this card goes. Kel, what do you think? So, well, In Kelly's eyes, this is like, you know, WrestleMania, apparently. Oh, so,
because I gave one star to a Pedro Sheep match. Well, I'm never going to live that down. No, this is outside of the match we just talked about. It's nothing. It's compared to the MSG shows we've talked about. This is the worst. So, yeah, it's really in a bad spot as we hit halftime here.
Not good.
Yeah, and the next four matches, I don't know. We'll save it, but we'll see. But first, before we return to the garden, let's take a break because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
PlayStimulation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStimulation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including the Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlayStimulation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStimulation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStimulation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
Get in the ring, jump, and let's thump. A couple of blows, and I'ma put you on your rump. Chop, chop, bam, then a left, right, left, and a kick, and a pin to the 1, 2, 3.
Said it
Right, we're back here looking at the June 1986 MSG show. Hopefully we'll survive the second half of this thing. And, you know, Kelly's out there dropping snowflakes all over the place for some of these matches, and he probably feels like he's on his own. Just like Patti LaBelle was on her own in tonight's number one song in the country, Scott Criscolo. And that only means one thing. It is time for the Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. On My Own by Patti LaBelle. Again, June 14th, 1986 was a Saturday. So this the Billboard Top 100 came out that day. And moving up one spot, it was number two last week. Again, On My Own by Patti LaBelle. And, of course, you know who the background singer on that song was, JR? Like most guys. Like most backup song singers on most songs in the early to mid-80s. And that is the man that sits on the throne of Yacht Rock, mm-hmm. Mr. Michael McDonald. Big shot there. At number two, dropping one spot, Live to Tell by Madonna, by the Material Girl. Of course, that was on the Vision Quest, another Vision Quest soundtrack. I always get that confused. That movie we were talking about, the movie that was on our last podcast we talked about, or two podcasts ago. Number three, moving up a spot, I Can't Wait by New Shoes. Nice one-hit wonder there. At number four, moving up five spots from last week, our man Billy Ocean, another yacht rocker, with They'll Be Sad Songs. They'll be sad songs to make you cry. At number five, moving up a spot, Crush on You by the Jets.
God, I couldn't hear. I was hoping it was a Lil' Kim's version.
No, I couldn't hear that enough on the radio. Number six, moving down three spots, our girl Whitney, Greatest Love of All. Number seven, moving up three spots into the top ten, looks like the first solo single for George Michael, as he is slowly fading himself out of Wham, called A Different Corner. I don't remember this song. At number eight, Howard Jones, No One Is to Blame. Number nine, moving down four spots, Mike and the Mechanics with All I Need Is a Miracle, which I heard at a gas station a few days ago. And moving down three spots to number 10 was Something About You by Level 42. So once again, JR, we have a top 10 full of shit. It's pretty
fitting
much
with this card, yes.
It's pretty much like this card. So there's your top 10. And once again, on the number one spot is Patti LaBelle and with our man Michael McDonald. So there you go. Okay. Four movies, JR and Kelly, came out the day before on June 13th. The one that made the most money is a memorable one from the late 80s, one of my favorite comedies of all time. But first, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. A drama. It made $1.44 million. I'm going to have to spell this for you, but the name of it's pretty funny. It sounds like a WCF pay-per-view. Belisaire the Cajun. He tag teamed with Van Burton. It is B-E-L-I-Z-A-I-R-E. Belisaire.
Okay.
The Cajun.
All right. 1986 film directed by Glenn Petre, starring Armand Desante. It chronicles the story of the Belisaire Bro, a village healer in Acadia in 1859. He becomes entangled in a violent conflict between Cajuns and the new Anglophone arrivals to Southwest Louisiana. Armand Asante, Gail Youngs, Michael Scofling, Stephen McCaddy, Will Patton, Lulon Petre Sr., Robert Duvall is the preacher. That's mm-hmm. all I got.
There we go. Okay. Coming in number three, it made $3.9 million, a comedy called The Manhattan Project.
Mm.
I think I remember this movie, barely, but I think I do.
It was Dr. John Matthewson discovers a new process for refining plutonium to purities greater than 99.997%. The United States government provides him with a laboratory in Ithaca, New York. Mass is a medical company. John moves to Ithaca and meets real estate agent Elizabeth Stevens while searching for an apartment. He attempts to win the affection of the single mother by inviting her teenage son Paul to take a tour of the lab. Go on from there. Starring Christopher Colley, John Lithgow, John Mahoney, of course of Frasier fame, Jill Eikenberry, right. Cynthia Nixon, Sex and the City, Robert Sean Leonard, Richard Jenkins, of course from here in Rhode Island, and Greg Edelman. So a lot of stars here. Richard Jenkins, the man, stepbrothers.
That's right. And who else did you say? You said
Cynthia Nixon, John Mahoney, John Lithgow.
Cynthia Nixon, John Mahoney, Jill Eikenberry, who was on L.A. Law, or she'd be on L.A. Law later in the decade. So yeah, a lot of stars there. Okay, the number two movie of the weekend made $5.79 million, a thriller suspense film called Mona Lisa. Like the painting.
Mona Lisa film.
I bet you it's not even about the painting.
It's a British neo-noir crime drama film about an ex-convict who becomes entangled in the dangerous life of a high-class call girl. George Hoskins, a low-level working-class gangster, recently released from prison, is given a job in London by his former boss, Danny Mortwell, as a driver and bodyguard for a high-priced prostitute named Simone. Mortwell also wants George to gather information on one of Simone's wealthy customers for blackmail purposes. Starring Bob Hoskins, Kathy Tyson, Michael Caine, Robbie Coltrane, Clark Peters, Katie Hurdy, Zoe Nathanson, Sammy Davis, not Junior. And that's about it for names.
Okay. And the number one movie of the weekend, and actually one of the funniest movies of the second half of the decade of the 80s, it made $91.25 million. It is a comedy. Back to School.
There you go.
Great movie. Kel, you know Back to School,
yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great movie.
When Rodney Dangerfield tells the girls in the bookstore, "I'd like to tame your shrew."
Thornton Melons is a rags-to-riches story. The son of Italian immigrant Taylor, shown as a boy in his father's shop, bearing a report card with poor grades. His ambition is to go to his father's line of work, but his father reprimands Thornton for his poor schoolwork. Tells him no matter how hardworking, skilled, or wealthy one man may be, if a man has got no education, he has got nothing. Are you a large person? Pleasantly plump? A little on the hefty side, perhaps? Well, let's face it. Are you fat? When you go jogging, do you leave potholes? When you make love, do you give directions? At the zoo, do elephants throw you peanuts? Do you look at the menu and say, okay? Starring Rodney Dangerfield as Thornton Melon, Sally Kellerman, Burt Young, Keith Gordon, Robert Downey Jr., Paxton Whitehead, Sam Kinison, Terry Farrell, Ned Beatty, Jason Hervey, of course, of WCW and Letters from Center Stage fame. Mm-hmm. We've covered him in this. Yep. My girl Edie McClurg from the Hogan family is in well. Kurt Vonnegut is himself in a cameo. So a lot going on here. I'm Back to School.
And also, I think you missed, I think Billy Zabka was in it, a.k.a. Johnny Lawrence from the from the Karate Kid was in that, too. Great movie. A tremendous movie. Do you remember, I don't know if you already saw it, J.R. Kelly, do you remember the dangerous dive in the movie?
Yes, that's what I remember the most of it. Yeah.
Yeah, what is it? Do you remember the name of it?
I was trying to think of it, but I'm blanking now. I haven't seen this movie in years. I saw
JR, do you remember?
No.
The Triple Lindy.
Oh,
Triple
yes. Okay, nice.
Right.
Yeah. Triple Lindy. Oh, tremendous movie. Kurt Vonnegut's in it because he wants his son to get a grade on a paper, so he actually has Kurt Vonnegut come and read and write Slaughterhouse-Five to him or something. He tells Kurt Vonnegut, fuck off. It's actually pretty funny.
Yeah,
good movie. So Back to School made the most money that weekend, June 13th, 1986, and ends up being a pretty good movie. All right. Sports quickie, only baseball. The NBA season is over, and congratulations to the Boston Celtics, who won their 16th World Championship, defeating the Houston Rockets 4-2. And the NHL season is over. Sorry, Kel. The Montreal Canadiens won their 23rd Stanley Cup, those motherfuckers, beating the Calgary Flames 4-1.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball. But you should be proud. The Flames had a good season. Got to the Cup finals.
Yeah.
Beat the Oilers.
That was the season that made me a hockey fan. I'll never forget it, for sure.
You know, Lanny and the boys, Mike Vernon and the gang. But they knew that better things were to come.
The
next couple of years. So, all right, on this day in Major League Baseball, June 14th, 1986, of course, a Saturday, all teams in action. The Yankees beat the Orioles at old Memorial Stadium, 4-2. Dennis Rasmussen with his 6th win, and Dave Rigetti his 16th save. The Mets beat the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-1 at Shea. Sid Fernandez now 7-2, and the Blue Jays at old Exhibition Stadium beat the Detroit Tigers 6-5. Tom Henke got the win, which means they probably won in the bottom of the ninth. So there you go. The standings to this point. In the American League East, the Red Sox at 40-20 lead the Yankees by 3.5. The Blue Jays are in sixth, 11 games out. Boo. In the West, Texas leads the California Angels by 3.5. In the National League East, the Mets with the best record in baseball, 41-16, lead the Expos by 10. And in the National League West, the Astros lead the Giants by 3 in the National League West. So that's your baseball for that day. All right, Kel, I mentioned to you earlier today that there was a tragedy in Canada on this day, a tragic day, an event that happened. on June 14th, 1986. Do you remember, do you know of a roller coaster called the Mindbender?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, in West Edmonton Mall.
In West Edmonton, correct? It's called, it was at a place called Galaxyland, I believe?
Yeah, I think they changed it to, what was it, something else later. But yeah, it was, the mall is huge, and inside the mall there's an actual, like, mini theme park, amusement park, that at the time was a huge deal.
Okay, well, on the evening of June 14th, 1986, the fourth car of the yellow train derailed before encountering the third and final loop. The train failed to clear the loop and slid backwards, fishtailing wildly and slamming into a concrete pillar. Damage from the derailment caused the lap bars to disengage at some point during the ride, throwing its four passengers at least 25 feet to the floor below. Three passengers died in the incident, while a fourth was critically injured. Others were treated for less severe injuries at a nearby hospital. An investigation determined that bolts on the left wheel assembly worked loose, causing the accident, and that design flaws by Schwarzkopf, whoever that is, along with a lack of maintenance by the mall, were likely to blame. When Mindbender reopened, the trains were redesigned. Existing four-car trains were converted to three-car trains, reducing seating capacity from 16 to 12, and anti-rollback features were installed. The lap bar restraint was retained, but seat belts and shoulder headrests were added.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah, I did ride the Mindbender years later, and I lived to tell about it. So.
There you go. That's why you're here.
You guys give shitty ratings on bad matches.
Oh, yeah, or no one else would have given one star to a midget match.
Oh, I think someone else did.
And finally, a death in the world of television on this date. On June 14th, 1986, at the age of 81. Well, I don't know if you guys totally remember, I guess, that went off the air in 1985. I barely remember the show. But there was a great show back in the 60s and 70s. I'm sure there's repeats on National Geographic now, called Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom.
Right.
Legendary TV show in the 60s and 70s and early 80s. You know, wildlife and different countries around the world and different continents. Well, the host of that show, the legendary Marlon Perkins, died at the age of 81 on this date on June 14th, 1986. The show was on the air from 1963 to 1985. He was from St. Louis, and he actually was the zoologist at the St. Louis Zoo. And there is your pop culture report for June 14th, 1986.
As you may know, Mike Francesa on vacation this week, being filled in for by Chris Christie. Didn't take long for someone to berate Mr. Christie on the radio, as infamous WFAN caller Mike in Montclair took him to the cleaners, and the New Jersey governor's defense was just a bunch of spluttering. Governor, next time you want to sit on a beach that's enclosed the entire world except for you, put your fat ass in a car and go to one that's open to all of your constituents. You know, Mike, I love getting calls from communists in Montclair, Christie have retorted. According to Monmouth University poll published, Christie has a 15% approval rating. So there you go. You can call in. But also, Scott, I don't know if you happened to catch any clips of what Mr. Christie was wearing while on air in the WFAN studios.
I did not, no. I'm sure Cowboys, because he's a big Cowboy fan.
This New Jersey governor was wearing the cap of his favorite football team, the Dallas Cowboys.
Correct.
Yeah. And a New York Mets jacket, a combination not found anywhere else in nature, says this writer. But Scott Criscolo, I do know another human being, brash, Republican loudmouth, who also wears a Cowboys hat with a Mets jacket. My PIC, Mr. Scott Criscolo.
Oh, God.
And you were at the beach on yesterday as well, so lots going on there, you and Chris.
Yes, I was.
Okay.
With a guy who had a tan that looked like he was with Marlon Perkins.
Yes.
In Zimbabwe or whatever. Oh, my God. All right. Speaking of Mike and the Mad Dog, JR, before we move on the way home from your fine abode last night, Mr. D'Amato and I were listening to the Mike and the Mad Dog on demand on Sirius XM on Mad Dog Radio. They had an open forum podcast. I don't know if it was a podcast, but it was a a show. Chaz Palminteri hosted it and had Mike and Chris on, and they talked about the show and everything. Of course, this Thursday on ESPN is the 30 for 30 on Mike and the Mad Dog. So kind of looking forward to that on Thursday.
All right, check it out. What we're not looking forward to is our next match here. maybe. Dory Funk and George Wells, our old friend. Big Hoss still hanging on. Was let out here by Jimmy Hart for a tilt with old reliable George Wells, who Gorilla calls a tough cookie, and Al says is a dangerous person. Wells grabs Haas's hat and teases throwing it into the crowd. The referee warns him not to do so. Haas takes control of the hat, and we get some stalling and posturing from there. Gorilla comments on Wells letting his hair grow back in and says Al says he changes his hairdresser every month. I guess he goes to a hairdresser. Wells takes Haas down, sending him rolling outside to regroup. Haas finally gets back in and takes over in the corner as Gorilla and Al banter about Jimmy Hart's jacket. Haas lays in elbows and uppercuts, really staggering Wells as Gorilla reminds us of Wells' recent bout with those eye injuries. That must be like the most publicized injury of all time. George Wells' fucking eye injury. I feel like we've heard so much about it.
Yeah.
Haas dumps Wells to the floor and suplexes him back in, goes to a step over toe hold and uses the ropes for leverage. Wells counters with a nice suplex and hits an uppercut of his own, but Haas trades punches with him. Haas again heads outside to gather himself, slowly goes back in as Al talks about Wells' weight gain, which Gorilla says was in all the wrong places. It says a derby is hanging out over his tights. Haas tries a shoulder block, but Wells doesn't budge. Wells blocks a slam and gets one of his own. Wells buries a knee lift and grabs a front face lock, but Haas backs him into the corner and lands some uppercuts. Wells shoots Haas to the corner, tries for his football charge, but Haas cracks him in the jaw with a knee, heads up top and dives off, but Wells catches him with a backbreaker for two. Wells gets tangled with Jimmy on the apron and turns around, but gets a cross body for two. Wells lands a headbutt, but eats some knees on a splash off the middle rope, and Haas cradles him for the win. Al says, Wells was moving like a tortoise and isn't in shape. This is pretty good for Wells, though. I thought he showed good fire, had some nice consecutive offense. Haas was solid, too. I thought this was fine. This was one of the better matches of the night. I went star and a half, and I really enjoyed the commentary where just, you know, they're constantly just calling Wells fat throughout this whole match. Scott, what'd you think?
It's a mess. Speaking of JR on Raw right now, instead of watching Wells and Haas Funk, wouldn't you like to watch modern day Kurt and modern day Brock in the ring at the same time? Probably now at their age, you're in better shape than either of these guys are. This match was 9:54. They should just get. Why is George Wells even still employed? I mean, it's just he's another guy that's just taking up space and stealing money. He's just terrible. Matches are terrible. I mean, I feel bad for Haas Funk because, I mean, obviously he's older, but this is a guy that could wrestle anybody at any time, and this match is just a disaster. George Wells is another guy that really is stealing money from the company. I actually gave it a star. I was being actually slightly more generous than you. I gave it a star and a half. Oh, I'm sorry. I read it wrong. I thought you wrote half star. I'm sorry. Yeah, you did. Star and a half. So I'm being less generous. I'm giving less credit, but most of that star goes to Haas for finding a way to survive it. But George Wells is another guy that just can't hack it anymore. And rather than just sit there and let the announcers humiliate him, might as well just let him go. Star for that one, Kel.
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of Dory, so that helped a bit. Wells looked all right. He's looked, you know, not too bad in a lot of the matches we've seen, actually. I was expecting, you know, only knowing him from WrestleMania 2, I was expecting, you know, quite a few duds from him, but I don't think he's provided actually too many duds. Yeah. He's wearing Calgary Flames colored tights tonight, so a little tribute to the Campbell Conference champions there.
Maybe he's trying to get some of those star ratings out of you, Kelly. He knows you're throwing around tonight. I was thinking,
yeah, he seemed a little darker, Kel. I don't know. They looked more like the Redskins or like Iowa State or something. I didn't think it was quite Flames colored, but anything to give George Wells 2.5 stars. I know.
Well, I mean, he spent some time in Canada in the CFL. Maybe he developed a following for the Flames or something. And I think, you know, he didn't have too much time left in the territory, and they were totally on commentary. Gorilla and Hayes were outright burying him. Basically, I think it had been decided that Wells was just, you know, really good for nothing and or whatever. You know, you can just tell by the commentary is more than just, you know, being part of the match or whatever. They were actually, I think, going out of their way to point out how out of shape he was. Funk,
Haas looked pretty good. You know, he didn't have a lot going for him at this time. Terry had left him high and dry with his fake brother or cousin or whatever the hell Jimmy Jack Funk was supposed to be. There were some good near falls by Wells at the end. This was actually B. Wells' last MSG match. So, you know, it was an okay run for the guy. Better than I thought. I gave this match 1.5 stars.
I'm going to miss George. I think I'm the only, one of the ones who likes him. I don't know. I know Pete doesn't. But he's like, I feel like he's at least consistently brings like some energy and a different like variance on a moveset. I don't know. He mixes things up a little bit. I've enjoyed him. I've enjoyed him overall. So yeah, I think I'll miss some of it.
Yeah, he's not one to sit in a headlock or work a headlock or an armbar. You know, we've seen some real bad work by a lot of guys.
And right.
Wells wasn't, at least he was trying to put together something interesting in his matches, I would say.
You gonna miss
Wells?
Yeah,
interesting in blowing moves. No, I'm not.
Come on.
I'm not gonna miss him. He's terrible. Big stumbling oaf. He should have kept his Master P and the No Limit Soldiers tights, and then maybe things would have been a little better, but no, I will not miss him. Not at all.
Give us some memories.
This match, however, was a tease, because I was expecting great things out of this one, JR, and it was
great, huh? King Tonga taking on Big John Studd. A big match. Tonga's trying to get that momentum. Studd demands that Fink calls him Giant John instead of Big John, and Tonga demands his 15K. Slam Studd on TV recently. Gorilla tells the whole story about how he hasn't gotten paid yet. Studd hammers Tonga off the bell before either gets their robes off. Al puts over Studd's power and speed combo as he clobbers away. Tonga quickly makes a comeback and punches away, but Studd grabs the top rope to block a slam. Studd clobs Tonga to the knee and heads to the apron, but Tonga blocks a forearm. Tonga tries to slam him into the ring, but Studd grabs the rope to block again. Al talks about how Studd's opponents get obsessed with slamming him, and it always costs him in these matches, and he's pointed that out a few times, and I don't think he's wrong. Studd and Tonga trade blows until Studd gets a hip toss for two. They continue to trade blows until Tonga catches him with a reverse crescent kick and a drop kick. Tonga hoists Studd up, but they both tumble over the top to the floor. They brawl out there with some fire until we get a double count out. They keep trading heavy blows after the bell, which makes Tonga look like a beast. I thought that was great, where he's just standing there throwing fists with Studd. Heenan keeps screaming for Studd to bail, and they just keep going toe-to-toe, which is, I thought, the best part of the match and maybe of the night. Tonga eventually runs Big John off with a headbutt and then stands tall in the ring. Shit finish, but I like the slam story that was going on, and I like the post-match. And Tonga at least seems more comfortable in the ring. I went 0.5 star just for that post-match stuff and the as well as the slam stuff. But yeah, disappointing, but I did enjoy the story, and I really liked Tonga beating the shit out of Studd at the end. What did you think, Kelly?
Yeah, that brawl at the end came out of nowhere, and right. It just kept going and going. Yeah, I mean, it was after the bell, but it was very entertaining. You know, I gave the match 1 star, but if we're counting the whole thing, I would give it 2 stars, counting the post-match brawl. That was a great slugfest. I didn't think Studd at this point had it in him to work that hard, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I loved Heenan just screaming for him to get out of the ring. You know, get out of there, get out of there. He's just like, fuck you.
Yeah.
He just keeps throwing bombs with Tonga. I was like, holy shit, where was this? It was like last month where Siviafi breaks out that crazy fucking dive. Yeah. I was like, where the hell's this been? You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden after the match, these guys are going nuts toe-to-toe.
Yeah, totally. Just like that. Total surprise. Yeah, I mean, they kind of had a thing going with these two guys. Like you said, Haku slammed them on TV. They would play this up for several months. I remember this still being an issue when I got into watching full-time later in the summer. This was definitely still going on. But yeah, I mean, the pre-bell stuff wasn't much at all. Several body slam teases and then a quick finish, quick count out. But yeah, the post-match brawl was, as far as post-match slugfest go, it was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And yeah, maybe the best thing on this whole damn card, actually.
What do you think, Scott?
I was disappointed. Not in the match. I gave it 1.5 stars. I wanted it to be longer because they were just hitting each other over and over again. I was loving it. And finally, I think King Tonga settled in, and and put on a, you know, the match I think we all knew he could. And Stud, you know, Stud could take the stiff shots. I wanted this match. This match was only 350. I wanted it to be like 1050 of them just sitting there punching each other. It was great. You could argue this is the second best match of the card.
Mm-hmm.
Just for that reason. I mean, they were just nice and stiff and just pummeled each other. And I wish it went longer. Good. This is a good role for Stud. You know, his star is dulling a little bit. And Tonga's on the rise. So I think this was a good spot for him. I wish this match was longer. I wish it was a little stiffer. And they really could have showed more, and they didn't. And I was a little bummer on that. So I gave it a star and a half, but I wanted more. And yeah. I think that's why I was disappointed. I wanted more out of this match. I wanted to see Tonga and Stud really lay into each other as stiff as they possibly could. So star and a half for me on that one.
What did you think of the fight after?
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. It was just as good as the match. Better I wish it was part of the match.
Than the match. Yeah, way better than the match.
I like all the slam stuff with Tonga, too. He's done it, and he keeps doing it. I think Al's been critical to these Stud matches. Like, I really like the point he keeps hammering home about how these guys just get distracted by trying to slam Stud all the time, and it costs them. I think that's been a cool story. And I've enjoyed this feud, even though this match hasn't done much. I think Tonga's finally getting his feet under him. Those cup-like feet that come to the mat has finally gotten under him, and he feels like it feels like he's finally kind of getting going, you know. So it's good.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, we head back to the ring. We have a big, I guess, re-debut, we'll say, with the legendary Harley Race. Began his career in 1960, working in Memphis. Star was on the rise, involved in a terrible car accident, took the life of his pregnant wife, and nearly cost him his leg. Defied doctors, returned to the ring in Texas, and then headed up to the AWA, teaming with Larry Hennig. After winning Tag Team Gold and experiencing a great deal of success, Race decided to strike out on his own and move to the NWA in the 70s. Race moved from territory to territory, defeating Dory Funk Jr. for the NWA Heavyweight title in 1973. Had a short run there, won gold again in 77, knocking off Terry Funk, before losing it to Dusty Rhodes in 1981. During that reign, Race traded the belt back and forth, but it never left his grasp for a substantial amount of time until 1983, when he defeated Ric Flair for his record-breaking seventh title run and then dropped it back to Flair at Starrcade of that year. During this time, Race had purchased into the Kansas City territory, but was quickly losing money to Vince McMahon's WWF expansion. Race was angered, even threatened WWF wrestlers, including Hulk Hogan, but eventually the losses piled up and was forced to continue wrestling, and eventually signed with the WWF in May of 1986. He took on Bobby Heenan as a manager, known as Handsome Harley Race, and of course would undergo a gimmick transformation that we'll cover soon. Before we get to the match, what did you guys think of Race coming in here, Kelly? Did it make you sad knowing he had to come because he was losing a shitload of money in Kansas City? Do you think he would have came anyway? What are your thoughts on him joining the WWF?
It sucks that, you know, his territory died, but I mean, it wasn't the WWF's fault. I mean, that territory was horrible,
right?
You know, for decades. The Central States is considered one of the worst of the territories. Some of the TV that's out there is just abysmal stuff. So yeah, it was a poorly managed territory. It was going to die anyway. So, no, it was cool to see Harley get a chance here. You know, I'm not sure why he didn't go to the NWA or to Crockett, but maybe he saw the writing on the wall, wanted to get in on the WWF. It's funny because there's the story, of course, where at one point he goes to a WWF show. This was before he signed with them and was still promoting in Kansas City, and he supposedly went with a gun and came to the door and was like, oh, where's Hulk Hogan? Something like that.
Yeah, I heard that story too.
Right. So he goes from that to being, you know, oh, I'm here I am. And yeah, I'll put on a cape and a crown and all that sort of stuff. Whatever. Bleach my hair blonde. But yeah, I mean, I love the idea of Harley Race more than anything else. Like, his matches are not always great, really. A lot of it is just, I don't know. It's hard to actually pinpoint what's wrong with Harley Race when the matches are discussed, but something just doesn't click often with them. Like, I'm no big fan of the Flair cage match from Starrcade. I didn't think that was anything special.
Well,
but they do have a good
help
match.
That fucking mess.
Yeah, that's true. But they do have a match earlier in the 83 that's really good. He had a bit left in him at this time. But I mean, I just love like the character of Harley Race with the tattoo and the gruff voice and the look, and you know,
handsome.
Such a bad
handsome,
yeah,
Harley.
handsome. He's such a badass. Just an old-time, old-school wrestling badass. Like an old gunslinger from the West or something like that. But, he's okay. Well, I don't know. I'll be interested to see what we get from him at MSG going forward.
Seems like he works a decent amount, so.
Yeah.
What'd you think, Scott? Of his coming out the match yet?
Well, at the time, I remember not knowing much about, you know, the fact that he was, I mean, I knew he was NWA, obviously, and I didn't know anything about his, the whole Central States thing, but I was pumped. Being a WWF guy as a kid, I wanted to see all the talent go there.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother was a big Harley fan, and, you know, he was in the twilight of his career, but I think I agree with you, JR. I think it was more a question of cashing in on the gravy train while it was moving on the tracks. He had done a lot of stuff in the late 70s. Obviously, he was friends with Vince Sr. and had a relationship with him, as obviously Vince Sr. had a relationship with Crockett. As a matter of fact, his last match in this building was, you know, 6 years ago. 35 minutes and 14 seconds, Mr. Nelson. Can you dig that sucker? against Bob Backlund, and I heard 28 of those 35 minutes was headlocks.
Yeah, I think that's accurate, actually.
But I was pumped. That was nice to see Harley. I like seeing like guys move across the border and to the promotion. So I didn't know anything about Central. I mean, I heard of Central States. I remember it in PWI and the mags, but I didn't know anything about Harley like running it or anything. I was, you know, none of that stuff actually happened back then. So we knew any of those kind of things. So. Yeah, I mean, it was cool to see him there. I kind of dug, a different face. And he went to the right manager. We've talked about this, JR, where you kind of rank heels based on what kind of manager would suit them. And Harley was definitely a Bobby Heenan guy, no doubt about it. Harley wouldn't fit anywhere else with anybody else. He is a Bobby Heenan guy through and through. So it was good to see him here in the company. I was pumped.
All right, so the big MSG re-debut is Heenan leads out Handsome Harley. Lanny Poffo's opponent tonight cuts a promo about them when we get underway. Poffo works a side headlock to start as Gorilla says Race doesn't get cooking for the first 10 minutes or so. Al compares him to, of course, Greg Valentine, the master of not getting started for 10 minutes. Poffo continues to grind the side headlock as the crowd gets restless. Race finally escapes and twists Poffo over with a nice gut-wrench suplex followed by an elbow. Poffo blocks a pile driver with a backdrop but can't capitalize as Race goes right back to work with knees and punches. Race lands a pile driver on a second attempt and covers, but Poffo gets his foot on the ropes. Race knocks Poffo outside and drops him to the floor with a brainbuster in a nasty spot. Back inside, Race gets a belly-to-belly for two, and Poffo's hanging in. The crowd's pretty quiet as Race slugs Poffo down and heads up top. Comes off the diving headbutt. Poffo gets dumped outside again, punches away, and then hits a falling headbutt to the floor. Poffo climbs back onto the apron, but Race meets him with a headbutt. Poffo tries to punch his way back into things and gets a nice victory roll type move for two. Poffo dropkicks Race to the apron, takes him back in with a messy flying head scissors. Poffo tries it again, but Race catches him and drops him across the top rope. Race then follows with a cradle suplex for the win. Pretty good match, I thought, even with the slow pace and sloppiness late in the match. Harley's offense was eye-opening at times for a WWF undercard match. Like, he was really working in some nice moves, and Poffo's bumping and working his comebacks like crazy. And I thought it was a good debut for Race, even though the crowd didn't seem to care. I thought both guys worked pretty hard, and like I said, I liked Race's varied offense that he showcased here. You don't see a lot of that in these matches. I went 2 stars for this, Scott.
I gave it 2 stars as well. I enjoyed it a lot. You know, the reason I enjoyed it was because we've been talking about Lanny kind of being stiff, getting stiffer in his matches, as he's been progressing at the Garden since his debut. And so I think this is perfect because Harley does not hold anything back, as we all know, through his career. So I was pumped to see this specific combination because I think Lanny would go with him. Move for move. And it was good. Your runtime was 10:56. So it got a good amount of time. And Harley, you know, definitely took that. I agree with you, JR, that Crockett way of thinking and put it in this WWF setting. And it was a little unnerving, but it was just kind of a shock to the system for typical MSG and WWF fans because that's not how house show matches are wrestled. Usually it's kind of gradual building with lots of, you know, grounded moves and rest holds. And Harley didn't do that, dropping pile drivers and stuff. And yeah, that's the kind of stuff you don't see on these on house shows like this. And I was impressed. I enjoyed it very much. I wanted to give it more than 2 stars, but that would have been a little much. But it's good to see Harley here. I kind of like him. You know, yeah, he's older, but stays in pretty good shape, in-ring shape, I should say, and can still put on good matches. Better than Pedro, that's for sure. I don't know if he's older or younger than Pedro. I'm guessing they're about the same age, and Harley's worked in better matches. Simple as that. You know? What do you think, Kel?
Yeah, I like this one, too. I give it 2 stars as well. I think it was during this match that it hit me, you know, this is a pretty dull card, lackluster card, for sure, but it was when Race came out that it finally hit me, like, okay, now this is the second match out of three with a former NWA champion involved, and then we have three former WWF champions on this card, Morales, Bruno, and the Iron Sheik. So there's, you know, from a kayfabe perspective, there's some serious former title holders on this card. I mean, yeah, most of them are well past their peak, but it's interesting the amount of champions, former champions that made it onto this card. Maybe one of the rare times when you had all these names on the same show. Yeah, Poffo has been looking good. Race, I mean, this was a typical Race match because he's kind of known as like the original spot monkey in a way, in that he just goes from one spot to the next, like pile driver, brain buster on the floor, all kinds of suplexes, the diving headbutt off the top rope. You know, there's really no psychology or transitions or storytelling. It's just bomb throwing by Race. And a lot of people are kind of put off by that. And that's maybe kind of what I was alluding to earlier when I said I couldn't really put my finger on why some of Harley's matches are disappointing. Is because, yeah, you get a lot of bombs in them, but underneath the bombs, there isn't a lot of substance often to Harley's matches. But this was fine for what it was. A nice re-debut for Race. I forgot to use that cradle suplex. Mm. You know, basically almost the perfect plex,
right?
Before Hennig came around. So yeah, I forgot that was his finisher. Actually, it's been a long time since I've seen a Harley Race in the WWF match. Actually,
Pedro's 7 months older than Harley, so all intents and purposes, same age.
Yeah,
and with that style, I actually think he is a good fit for this stretch of WWF. Like bomb throwing, like every other match is more. All right, work a hold, work a limb. It's actually kind of refreshing to see a guy out there not doing that shit.
Yep. Just
going out there and, you know, whatever, emptying the arsenal. So a good fit for this style. All right, let's move on to our main event. I'm sorry, our last match of the evening, not our main event, as we've been told many times. So our final match of the evening is Junkyard Dog taking on King Kong Bundy. JYD still being held to a high card standing against Bundy here to close the show. Bundy still hanging out at the top of the card as well, now a made man after a feud with Andre and Hogan. Huge pop for JYD and grab them cakes. We start with a lockup as the crowd busts out a large JYD chant. The two break clean, but the referee gets tangled with JYD, allowing Bundy to sucker punch him and go to work. JYD dodges an elbow and pelts Bundy with headbutts and knocking him outside. Bundy returns to the trade offense until Bundy buries him with a clothesline and drops a fist for two. JYD makes a comeback with right hands, knocking Bundy down and getting a near fall. JYD whiffs on a falling headbutt, but a moment later, both men end up eating clotheslines on each other. Bundy meets Dog with an axe blow to the back, but JYD fires right back at him. Both guys are gassed and staggered as they trade right hands in the middle of the ring. Bundy wins the standoff, and JYD collapses back and eats an elbow drop for two. Bundy goes to a rear chin lock, leans on that for a while. He releases the hold and comes up empty on a big splash. JYD hammers away but gets tripped by Heenan. Bundy hits the big splash, but the referee calls for the DQ thanks to the Heenan interference. Heenan slaps JYD after the bell but skips away from an avalanche and then chases Bundy and Heenan off with this chain. Confusing finish the way they did it because Bundy thinks they won and they celebrate even though it was a clear he never counted. The whole thing was odd. Not a shock though. Obviously they wanted to protect Bundy. A decent power match. It felt like a good spectacle. The crowd agreed. Lots of heavy offense by both men but not much else. Star and a half to close the show. And I thought it was kind of sad that we had so many shit finishes on this card. DQ, DQ, count out, double count out. This is so much out there that's just, I don't know. This is an unsatisfying card overall, Kelly.
Oh no, I agree. It was a horrible card. And this match doesn't really do much to redeem it. It started off pretty cool. I mean, the crowd was hot, mm-hmm. and it was kind of a hoss fight right at the beginning. I mean, it's on paper, it's a pretty star-studded match for the time. Bundy was coming off a main event at Mania. JYD was probably number two still as a babyface. And yeah, but then, I mean, Bundy slaps on a headlock and it totally killed the match. At that, you could see people just streaming out of MSG during the headlock spot. I mean, yeah, it was the final match of the night, but still. And the finish is pretty lame. The camera doesn't even capture the disqualification, which was, I think, Heenan tripping JYD. But yeah, we didn't even get to see that. Yeah, it was just apropos, I guess, for the card as a whole, that we end with a disappointing disqualification finish at the end of the show. So yeah, oh well. Here's to next month. Oh, one star.
Scott?
I gave this one star as well, and I agree with you, Kel. I think people were like, the minute we see a rest hold, we're going to try and hit the next train out of Grand Central. Or if you live in Long Island, you're going to walk downstairs to Penn and get out of here, because I think people were cooked at this point. having said that, I mean, not a bad spot for either guy. Bundy still, again, held in high regard, as is JYD. So the spot on the card isn't disappointing. Your match length, 8:43 to finish the night off. And again, it was, you know, kind of slow and plodding, and I don't think we really see the real degrading of JYD's in-ring work till we get to the beginning of 87. I think he actually still is moderately decent throughout the rest of 86. So he's okay in that aspect here, but once we got to the long rest hold, it was lights out and everybody was heading for the exits. So there was one star is about as good as that's going to get. JR, did you feel like Bundy was being devalued here now that the Hogan feud was over?
No. I mean, JYD is still pretty high ranking, and he's closing the show. No, I don't think so. I actually think he's holding up better than you would expect, maybe, for a guy that is kind of run through his usefulness as far as big matches go. So, no, this is a decent spot for him, and we'll see, obviously, more stuff with him and Stud. And, no, they've done a good job. He's stayed up a little bit higher in the card than I would have thought after two. He's, you know, Kelly and I, we talked about it in our pod blast for the GWWE project. He is he has a lot of good moments, and he had a pretty good sustained push. I mean, we saw it all with the jostling, and now here, and here he is still kind of closing shows and having big matches. So, I think it's been a good run for the King Conger. We get one quick little blip here. Chet Kopic chats with Randy Savage about a big cage rematch in July. So we'll talk about
that. Not Chet Kopic, Ken Resnick.
Anyway.
Do we ever see Chet Kopic after WrestleMania 2?
I don't know what made me put that. I feel like, I don't know. I guess it is. They look the same, kind of. They all look alike.
blonde Midwest looking dudes.
They all look the same. All right. So why don't we go through our awards here to wrap up the show? Our match of the night, I went with the big tag, Savage and Adonis, Bruno and Tito. Anyone disagree?
I went with Iron Sheik versus Pedro Morales. No, I went with the tag.
Scott? Yeah, me too. Tag.
All right. Let's put that in here. All right. Our cousin Junior, the worst match of the night, I went with, of course, George Steele.
Everything else?
And everything else. George Steele versus Nikolai Volkov. You agree, Cal?
Yeah, that's the one I gave the dud to. I also didn't like Jimmy Jack Funk and Tony Gurria very much, but yeah, I'll go with
Steel and Volkov was much more offensive overall than Jimmy Jack. What'd you think, Scott?
Well, we had two duds, so technically we could say it's a tie, but I'll go with Steel and Volkov. That was just unwatchably bad. Beyond dud. Below negative dud.
Brutal. All right, our MVP of the evening, I went with Bruno. I thought Bruno was the best overall on the show. I really enjoyed him. You guys agree?
I want to give it to Harley, but I almost want to give it to Adonis, too, just for the promo where he called him a potato head. But I'll go with Bruno. Bruno was on his game for, you know,
You know, for a match with Savage in it, I think he's shown the most in that whole match, and that was the biggest match of the night.
I agree. All right, I'll go with Bruno.
Yeah, I'll make it unanimous with Savage being a close second. I mean, Savage is almost a default MVP every show out. But yeah, Bruno, he held his own with those guys for sure, and then was probably the MVP of that match. So yeah, Bruno.
All right, Uncle Elmer Award for the worst worker of the evening. To me, this was a no-brainer. I went George Steele.
George Steele, no doubt.
I went with Danny Spivey because he's a poor man, extremely poor man's Barry Windham, and I really just don't like the guy at all. It's total bias on my part, but I don't care. I'm taking Spivey.
All right. I'm gonna break up. We almost had a clean sweep here across the board. Best moment, I really liked the open to the main event tag, the Bruno match, but I'm going to go with Tonga and Stud Slugfest. I think it came out of nowhere. It was really hot. I mean, they just went – I mean, that's what wrestling is, like just two fucking beasts just going toe-to-toe, slamming into each other with a big fist. And I thought Bobby was great, screaming at Stud to get out of the ring. So that's my choice.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. That was great. That was awesome.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Awesome. Our Junior Mr. Universe Award for the biggest juice head of the night. I went with actually this is a card that didn't have a lot of options. I didn't think there were too many. I went JYD. I thought he was probably the most likely out there, but I didn't think anyone else was really.
And that speaks volumes how flabby the rest of the card was.
Yeah, it wasn't a really. I didn't think there was too much juice flowing on this card.
No, there wasn't. We didn't have the usual suspects like the Bulldogs and Ted RCD. Tony Atlas.
Right.
I went with Randy Savage because he was pretty jacked at this point in time.
Yeah, I was close on him.
Yeah, I think I'm about to go with Savage, too.
All right, I'll go
and
with Savage.
Savage was as jacked as he would be in the past.
I'll go with Savage, too. I'm not too sold on JYD. I just kind of went with him. All right, overall grade, probably not going to be pretty. My previous low was a... I had it here a second ago. 4.5, 3.5. I went 3.5 for the November 85, and that's the last I went that low. And this is going to shatter that record. I went 2.5 for the show. I don't know. The matches all were terrible, I thought. The biggest match of the night only hit 3 stars, which wasn't enough to save this. I thought the back end was okay. You know, like I didn't mind JYD Bundy, Poffo Race. The brawl with Tonga Stud was okay, but God, this is nothing much. And I don't care if the midgets are good. I just can't get into the matches because there's no. I need some kind of hook, like some kind of. The guys are going somewhere, doing something. Like there's no division or movement for the midget match. It's literally just an exhibition. I just can't get into it. And the rest, the whole first half is absolute dog shit until the main event tag. So yeah, 2.5 for me. No redeeming qualities here, really. Very few.
Wow.
Okay.
I'll go ahead, Scott.
I gave my lowest grade was a 3, and that was the Wrestling Classic. Was this show worse than the Wrestling Classic? Yeah, it probably was. I'm giving it a 2.
Nice.
It was bad, and the tag could not save it. I thought it could, maybe it could. It could not. It was abysmal. So, and some of these other cards and some of these guys, the George Wells and Pedro, they just bring nothing to the table. So I will go with I'll go with a 2. I mean, this is bad. I hope to never watch this house show ever again. Ever.
Yeah.
Maybe the tag again I'll watch. And maybe there's got to be better better Stud King Tonga fist fights around the country that maybe I can find. But this show is such a drizzler. I seriously hope to never have to watch it again.
Huh. Yeah, I'm hoping that we never top this one or whatever. My lowest rating was a 4, and that was October 85. That was didn't really have much going for it other than a Piper's Pit with Bruno on it. So if you remember, the matches from that one were pretty bad. So I did go lower. I went 3.5. The back end of the card picked up a bit with the Stud Tonga brawl and the Harley Race match. The tag was pretty good. There was a lot of crap. There was nothing as offensive as the Jim Neidhart versus Brunzell 20-minute draw from the last time out. Most of the matches, yeah, some of them were getting a bit longish. I watched this in, I watched everything except for the last two matches in one go. So I was in a better mood than sometimes when I'm watching this.
It sucked.
But
though.
Yeah,
it sucked.
No, I know it sucked.
You get a weird hard on for the show, man.
Yeah, I know. I had that one star cheek Pedro Morales classic that everybody has to go out and see. But yes, let's hope it doesn't get much worse than this. Let's hope this was rock bottom for MSG.
All right, guys, real quick with the return of comments or the debut of comments at PlaceToBeNation.com, we are also returning, Scott, our feedback segment, of course, for fans of the show. You may remember for a long time we'd accept feedback from the listeners before the show was to be recorded, and then we'd read it on air to close things out. Just a couple today, of course, as we get back into it. But if you want to leave feedback, we will have a dedicated thread for it every week before. Well, you'll see us mentioned a few times on social media and at PlayStation.com. But that day, we'll usually have a dedicated thread, and you'll be welcome to share your feedback. We'll track it all and read it at the end of the show. And we have two that I'm going to read here tonight. First one from our buddy John D'Amato. Says, the Tito Bruno versus Savage Adonis is a forgotten gem. And most remember the upcoming cage match. Four of the best ever, working perfect spots and controlling the crowd in the palm of their hands. The rest of the card is a rough endorsement for old-school house shows, but just a blip on the radar. And then our buddy Steve Rogers says, too bad they weren't doing any sort of nods to the past and other promotions in those days. Did they ever mention Terry Funk won the prestigious titles around the world? But Bruno Sammartino and Harley Race on the same MSG card with no interactions. Honk, honk. Yeah. Absolutely correct. Why not, you know? But there you go. There's our feedback. So if you want to get in on the action, of course, we will be reading that on each and every show. I know some of these are harder to find, so you got to maybe work off memory or work off Graham's site. I think when we get to the pay-per-views, obviously, we'll get more. But be sure to keep up with us at PlayStation.com. Join in the conversation if you have kind of been out of the loop or you didn't have Facebook and maybe you were with a message board back in the day. Come join us. We have lots of conversation. It's been a good thread tonight talking about Raw and the Home Run Derby. And, of course, you'll be able to leave feedback there as well. So, Scott, anything you want to talk about before we wrap up?
Yeah, if you didn't get a chance to check out this past week's episode of the main event, myself, the Godfather Nate Milton, and the hard-traveling fanboys, Greg Phillips, Nick Duke, we previewed Great Balls of Fire, which of course was last night. But we also did some grading of some WWE superstars through the first half of the season, first half of the calendar year in wrestling, and kind of graded them. We recaps Impact, whatever the hell they're calling it, eventually. And we previewed, to a certain extent, the G1 Climax tournament. And on next week, we'll be back with the next week's episode of Main Event. We will be a couple of days into the tournament, so we'll get into that. And we'll preview Battleground, etc. So look out next week for the next episode of the Main Event.
Very good. Of course, each and every Friday, check out Letters from Center Stage with me and the chap called Alan. A new one dropped this past week. Talked about old Donut Hole's Doug Dillinger. That was a fun episode. We ranked the NWO members. Plenty going on. And, of course, this week is looking like the return of Jeff Learns Wrestling, the hottest show out there today. Hottest new show, I should say. Jeff was overseas on vacation. He's back. He actually watched Great Balls of Fire with us last night, Scott. And he wasn't planning on staying the whole night, but he got hooked and he stayed. So, and he was even commenting in the thread. So hopefully, you know, his education continues this week as we move into 1986 WWF. So be sure to look forward to that. Check out the archives if you haven't heard it yet before. It's a fun show. And, of course, the Greatest WWE Wrestler Ever project rolls on. Lots of Pod Blast podcasts out there. Lots of information and material. Join in the conversation. That's on Facebook and at PlaceMation.com. Reach out for details if you want to take part of that. Kelly, anything you want to cover?
I'll just say that I've been recording some shows for the For Your Consideration podcast with we've recorded one so far, and another one is coming up soon with good old Will from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Texas,
now.
Don't break
kayfabe. Well, he used to be Texas. they're fun. I won't spoil anything, and they probably, who knows when they're going to drop. Will has this complicated schedule and all that. So yeah, look for them in the future. Longtime fans of Place to Be Nation will be
thoroughly entertained, I'm sure.
Yeah, big surprises to come there. Lots of visionettes in mind as well. So, all right, when are we going to wrap up? We're going to wrap up. We'll be back next week, next Monday, looking at the July show. Hopefully a bounce back from this disaster. And then we will go on from there. So everyone enjoy your week. Check out everything at PlayStation.com. Also, if you're taking part in Amazon Prime Day, which is on Tuesday, use our link, PlayStation.com/Amazon. Takes you right there. You don't need to do anything else at all. You can do all of your shopping and give us a little kickback. So thank you for that. Facebook.com/PlaceBNation. Twitter, place number 2B Nation. We'll talk to you next week. Everyone take care. Aaron Judge is the man. Home Run Derby champion. See ya.
Boo.
No Blue Jays were involved in any All-Star game. Just
they don't sell nandrolone at the concession stands.
Oh, my good expression.